Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency. We had a candidate that we made an offer to prior to having the ID checking in place. We asked the candidate for copies of his documentation and a selfie just of his face, like passport photo type thing. When the documents came back, the individual had taken his selfie in the nude, ..
In a workplace situation, this is, like I said, it fits the criteria for sexual harassment. We have got the new duty now in place for employers that we have a duty to prevent sexual harassment from occurring in the workplace. Now, this is different to the law prior to the 26th of October of this year, which is where if someone was subjected to sexual harassment in the workplace, yes, the employer could potentially be liable. If I was doing a risk assessment for this business, that employee is going to rocket that risk up through the ceiling because of this person's judgment in a situation like this. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
So 24 of the HRER podcast.
It's 12 hours of podcasting that people have listened to.
Oh, when you put it like that, yeah. Assuming they've listened to them all, of course.
Of course, why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they? It's gold.
Anyway, I'm Alyssa Thursfield. I'm the founder of Heroes, and welcome to another episode of HRER. My co-host?
Oliver Robinson. I work at Heroes in many capacities. Jack of all trades, really. Master of none.
I just spotted you got a Metallica t-shirt on today as well.
Yes.
That's a vibe.
You're a fan of Metallica, yeah. You are, aren't you? You like your guitar-driven music. I'm aware of that because we've exchanged bands.
We have.
Because we're not just colleagues, we're...
Music enthusiasts. So it's a Red Clay Strays this week, wasn't it?
It's a Red Clay Strays, yeah. And weirdly, this is not related at all. I listened to a podcast yesterday because the day before we film, I listened to podcasts. It's like weird.
Good to know.
Yeah, to get myself ready. The guy on it mentioned the Red Clay Strays.
Oh, okay.
It was Joe Rogan when he mentioned it and they started listening. I was like, whoa.
And now you know who they are.
Yeah, now I know. Yeah, I've listened to it. We had to wear them on the office, didn't we? Anyway, huge tangent there to start off with.
Not related at all to what we're going to talk about today.
No. We're talking about some ID checking software mishap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's get cracking in. I'll read the email out. Hi, Alyssa. We are onboarded and using your system. Thanks so much. We love it. The onboarding has made life so much easier, and we finally have some consistency with things like offer letters, contracts, the onboarding process, and the overall employee experience. It has been quite life-changing. Our favourite feature has been the ID checking software and right-to-work checks. We haven't missed a single one since signing up with you. I promise there is an issue here. This isn't just feedback on the system. So, we had a candidate that we made an offer to prior to having the ID checking in place. We asked the candidate for copies of his documentation and a selfie just of his face, like passport photo type thing. When the documents came back, the individual had taken his selfie in the nude, .. Any thoughts?
Yeah, anything that ends with .. is always going to be it's almost like a duh, duh, duh.
It is.
What happens here? In this situation, we got a nude selfie back from someone who was asked by an employer who was making a job offer to them so that they could check their ID. Now, I would hope that the most reasonable person would realise that all they need is a face. And actually, if we're asking for a headshot, that, you know, it goes without saying that we expect somebody to be clothed. But
yes,
a full nude selfie is what we got back in this situation.
Mm. And that's a strange comment to make, but it's often people that don't have a lot to show. I'm making allusions to, like, when you walk around a town centre in the summertime, there's often quite a lot of, for lack of a better term, like just
exhibitionism.
Yes, like topless men.
Yeah.
And they're often either extremely skinny or extremely the other way.
Though, you know what? I'm going to go with the whole body confidence thing. I don't think you necessarily have to have it to show it off. If you want to kind of show the world your goods and what you're doing is legal, crack on.
The world, but not your employer.
This is also not legal.
Yeah, true.
So within the boundaries of what's legal. So, yeah, really, really interesting one. I mean, HR in this situation, I think they knew what they were going to do, but it's that sounding board with to sort of just go, is there anything else actually that we need to be aware of? And there actually was some stuff that we needed to be aware of in this situation, but we'll get into that as we talk about it.
We will. I mean, to start off with, he's not an employee, is he? He's a candidate, so I imagine it's a little bit...
He's a candidate, you know, sufficient grounds to look at withdrawing that offer.
Oh, yeah.
Because ultimately, where you have got this situation where someone is sending nude photographs, this is potentially sexual harassment. So the person that he was engaging with, not that it really matters that if it's for someone of the same or opposite gender, it was female HR administrator that he was dealing with. The naked selfie was sent across to her. So she'd emailed and said, look, this is what we need from you. And that was his response, was to send a naked photo. So when we look at the definition of sexual harassment, so when we have behavior of a sexual nature that has the purpose or effect of creating a humiliating, intimidating, hostile, or degrading environment that has a negative effect on someone's dignity, then we are in the realms of sexual harassment. And I would say, personally, am I a prude? No, but sending a naked picture to somebody, I would say, is sexual behaviour.
Oh, yeah.
And it did have the effect of described on the HR administrator. So it's an allegation of sexual harassment.
Sending nude selfies is inappropriate in the workplace. I'd say it's inappropriate regardless if it's solicited or not. I don't want my junk on the cloud, thank you.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, I was about to give the caveat that unless you're in a consensual relationship and that's kind of how you communicate, then fine. But also, yes, you are sending things out into the world that you no longer have control over. And if that relationship breaks down, so this is a warning to any of you out there who like sending this sort of stuff. You don't know where your stuff's going, you don't know who's got it, you don't know who can manipulate it. So just generally don't. But yeah, in a workplace situation, this is, like I said, it fits the criteria for sexual harassment. We have got the new duty now in place for employers that we have a duty to prevent sexual harassment from occurring in the workplace. Now, this is different to the law prior to the 26th of October of this year, which is where if someone was subjected to sexual harassment in the workplace, yes, the employer could potentially be liable. But we had an obligation just to deal with it correctly. Now we have to try and prevent it from happening in the first place. So in this situation, if we actually allow that candidate into the workplace, he's a risk. Because even before he's been employed, he's thought it was appropriate to send a naked selfie to HR. So imagine under kind of, you know, what he might think the comfort blanket of an employment contract gives him, what he might get up to at work. And part of the way that we prevent sexual harassment is... we need to think, well, how could it occur? How are we going to spot that this could happen in the workplace? So we do a risk assessment. So we think about what our work environment is like. Where are the potential points where this could happen? Do we have any risky, shady characters where allegations have been raised against them before? Where people have said that perhaps they don't like being alone with people. Do we have people who work alone? Because remember, sexual harassment could happen from somebody who comes onto the workplace premises. It doesn't have to be a colleague. So if you have got someone locking up a business at night in the dark and there's public access to a car park or something like that, sexual harassment could occur there. So all these sorts of things, we've got to do a risk assessment on. If I was doing a risk assessment for this business, that employee is going to rocket that risk up through the ceiling because of this person's judgment in a situation like this. So with that duty in mind, we've got to be really, really careful in situations like this. So one, yes, great, we're going to stop this person from potentially entering the workplace. But we've also got to think about our HR administrator in this situation who has been subjected to sexual harassment. It's happened to her.
Yeah, it's already done. It sounds like the law change there, you're going from more like reactive to proactive.
Yeah.
Is the kind of tone change there, am I right?
Yeah, so preventative now is where this focus needs to be. And it's a serious responsibility. And if you think about, you know, if we're in a situation where we could have prevented something and we didn't, what that judgment is going to say. So if you're sat in front of a judge who's going to pass judgment on your business to say that you failed in your duty to prevent sexual harassment, that somebody has had this behaviour inflicted on them because you failed to protect them. That's quite a thing. So one, personally? Is that really something that you want to have been held responsible for? But from a PR perspective for your business, if there is a judgment out there that says that you haven't protected your employees and that you could have prevented it if you'd taken reasonable steps, if you'd done your risk assessment, if you'd trained your staff, if you'd dealt with your processes correctly, that you could have stopped this from happening, it's going to be very hard to recruit in what's going to become an increasingly difficult market to find talent.
Let's hypothesize for a second before I actually ask the big questions. Let's say this candidate wasn't a candidate, mm-hmm. and he sent it to the HR administrator lady. How much would the company be on the hook for there?
So if this was just some randomer from the street, do you mean, or if they're an employee?
No, like if this guy was an employee.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he did it to a HR, mm-hmm. HR professional at the company.
Yeah.
How much could that business be on the hook for not preventing it now?
So the company has got a risk there. So yeah. If they have got someone who has felt that it is an appropriate thing to do, what we'd need to establish here, so we'd investigate the situation. Okay. So on the face of it, it's always going to be dreadful sending naked photos at work. Actually, as we've already said, naked photos to anybody. What could come out of that situation is that they are in a relationship. Somebody else might have intercepted that message, you know, if you've got HR off on holiday or something like that. Or if it's totally unsolicited and this is a very kind of aggressive sexual maneuver. Really then we need to look at, were there any warning signs? So have there been reports about this person's behavior before? Have we done our risk assessment to establish whether there is a risk of this sort of thing happening? Now, we're not mind readers. We can't look in a crystal ball and go, this person is going to do something totally out of character, that's unexpected, that there were no warning signs for. So in that situation where we could not reasonably have prevented it, we've still then got to act appropriately with the aftermath and deal with it properly. Okay. So when the duty isn't so high that we're expected to look in that crystal ball, but it is so tough that we are expected to kind of take a very broad view of the workforce, look at our risks, be really, really honest with ourselves about the risk. So if you've got a senior member of staff where complaints have been made against them, they get swept under the rug, we don't believe what people say, or we are routinely paying people off, that person's a risk. Mm-hmm. So then if it does happen and someone refuses to be paid off and it goes to tribunal, you could have foreseen reasonably that
the cost is built up.
There's a pattern of behaviour there that we fail to acknowledge. So it's, the answer is very kind of lawyery, which is, it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that my clients hate to hear, but that's often what we say in these situations. But that's why the risk assessment is so crucial. And the one that I've designed that, we're going to come on to talking about what employers can do later on, but what the risk assessment I've designed asks some really, really probing and some really, really difficult questions, where we've got to be very honest with ourselves about where the risk in our business actually falls. And it will ask questions like, have you ever discouraged somebody from bringing a formal complaint? Have you ever paid somebody not to bring a claim and to sign a confidentiality agreement? Because those are the difficult questions. That is where we've sidestepped something rather than dealing with it appropriately, particularly if the person who's committed that conduct hasn't then been dismissed.
It's easy to ignore things like that and let them go and build it up, isn't it? First proper question as an employer. We've kind of covered this a bit. Not so much the second part. Is submitting a nude photo considered sexual harassment? Yes. Which company policies have been violated?
So hopefully the business will have now a sexual harassment in the workplace policy.
Yes.
So it's been a question that I've been asked many, many times since the new duty has come in, which is, we have a general dignity at work, or we have a general kind of discrimination, you know, don't do horrible things against your colleagues policy. Is that enough? Not really. I would say where we've got this preventative duty, we need a standalone, really clear, really strong sexual harassment policy about that subject in its entirety. So we're not burying it in another policy to go, don't discriminate, don't bully, don't harass, also don't sexually harass people. No, we want this.
It
is. We want this to be really, really clear. Because one of the key things, and this kind of leads on to, you know, from, you know, talked about risk assessment, talked about the policy, is if people hopefully are all reading the policies, so we've talked about with our system how easy we make that we can show that people have read stuff, it's not the easiest topic to understand. Now, hopefully you're sat there going, what on earth is she talking about? I know not to touch people where I shouldn't touch them.
Yes.
I know not to say certain things. Mm. But actually, when we get down to the definition of sexual conduct, So that could be verbal, it could be physical, it could be electronic, that is unwanted, that has the purpose or effect of causing a degrading, humiliating, da-da-da environment. Mm-hmm. So when we unpick that, hopefully everybody can work out if something is sexual or not. In this situation, a naked selfie, yes it is.
Yes.
Unwanted. That is where there is so much argument. Was it wanted? Was it not? Was it invited? Did the person reasonably think that it was going to be welcomed? And what we'll often get here is that the employer will say, there's a culture of banter. So particularly when we're talking about things like sexual language, there's a culture of banter. This person engaged in that banter. So they assumed that the conduct would be welcomed. And what they do is they focus on the person who's committed the conduct and what they thought. We need to be thinking about what the victim felt and thought. So if we focus too much on what the person who has done it thinks, we're always going to find in their favor. If a victim has said, well, look, there is this culture of banter. I feel like I kind of have to go along and laugh at the right points, but really, I absolutely hate it. And this, they just took it too far. It's unwanted conduct. Yeah, yeah. So the safety point for an employer has got to be that we put weight on what that victim says and that we take their point of view when it comes to whether something is wanted or not. But that is where we kind of really get the crux of the argument. We then have purpose or effect. So if someone has done something with the purpose of sexually harassing, that's quite a standard. We're like saying,
you intended to do this.
But actually, the law goes wider than that. It says if the conduct had the effect, so whether you intended it to happen or not, if it had the effect of sexually harassing somebody and it had the effect of causing that humiliating, that degrading environment, it is sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. So the person might say, well, I didn't intend that to be the outcome. I thought I was just being friendly.
They are see like the salt pop outs, man.
If it had the effect of causing that environment, it's sexual harassment. And that knowledge gap, that is so crucial because people can identify sexual conduct. They can, generally, provided that they're good people. They can.
Yeah.
It's that issue around purpose or effect and whether something's wanted or not. And that's why the training is so important, because otherwise you're going to get someone at the other end of a sexual harassment disciplinary hearing who goes, but I didn't know. I thought that they wanted it. I didn't intend it to have that effect. And HR goes, it doesn't matter. This is the definition of sexual harassment. And then they go white as a sheet and go, well, I didn't know that. So we've got to train them. If we're going to prevent this from happening, we have to train the workforce so that we remove that argument, we remove that defense and go, no, you knew better because we taught you. We trained you on what was acceptable and what wasn't, and you did it anyway.
It's just, it's not even seen amongst like sexual harassment cases. It's a broader thing, I think, when people will make a mildly offensive or perhaps like controversial comment or joke. Someone takes it the wrong way, they just backpedal and go, I'm sorry, it was banter.
It was banter, yeah. You know what? Judges hate banter. Judges hate it. They don't accept it. They don't go, oh, well, why are we all here? It was just banter. There was no problem then. Everyone can go home and we'll all bear our own legal costs and we'll just hope it doesn't happen again. No, judges hate banter. It's not an excuse. And like you said, banter is a way of backpedaling. Hmm. Often it's where someone goes, oh, God, I've put my foot in it. Oh, it was just banter. It was just banter. I didn't mean it. No, it's not an excuse. And it's one of my sort of pet hates, and one of the things that I often say when I do go out training people is when people go, oh, but, you know, we want it to be like a family environment. We want people to have fun at work and, you know, it's the work family. But your positive experience at work should never be at the expense of someone else having a negative day.
Yes.
If that's what it takes to get your fun environment, it's not fun.
No.
It's not. There are other ways to make a workforce and a workplace positive and inclusive so everybody can enjoy themselves at work. If we are having to make somebody else feel dreadful so that we can all have a laugh, that is not okay. And that's where we're going to get into trouble if we don't start to train this behaviour out.
That's real, real poor culture, isn't it? Also,
I'm very ranty today.
Yeah, I like it. I love a rant, you know me. Bring it. The thing of like saying, well, I want my workplace to be like a family. You're not sending new pickies to your auntie, are you?
No, you're not.
You're not doing that. Second question from an employee perspective. Does this breach any protection or privacy laws? And what steps should we take to ensure we're handling the situation in line with GDPR?
So interesting. I mean, I suppose there's a couple of ways to take this question. Is that when the potential employee, when the candidate maybe realizes he's done the wrong thing, maybe he thought he was sending the selfie to somebody else. We don't know. We haven't investigated this yet. You know, perhaps that was off to a Tinder date and he accidentally emailed it to
slipped.
HR. Who knows? But ultimately, say if it was a mistake, so he's accidentally sent the nude selfie in. That is obviously his personal data. It's a very, very sensitive piece of personal data. And if the company holds on to that, what they do with that from a data protection perspective. So I wouldn't be putting it on LinkedIn if I were the company. You know, let's not be processing sensitive personal data in that way. That would probably not be lawful.
But if you blur out his face...
Let's not do that. No. You know what? We're just not going to do that. Because remember, with data protection, if data is about someone, even if we don't have, you know, a name, it's still personal data. So even if we blur his face out, it would still be personal data. So in that situation, I mean, if we were to pass that on to a legal authority like the police, that would be an appropriate use of the data. If we were to store it, why are we storing it? I mean, do we really want it?
No,
in our systems? Probably not. I mean, I would be making a note of what it is that we've received, maybe retaining it for a period in case we ended up in litigation, you know, with the HR administrator. But are we going to be arguing that it wasn't a nude selfie? Probably not. You know,
definitely was.
You know, it's a bit of a sticky one. If you know, your company systems were hacked and that picture ended up all over the internet, well, the individual sent it in the first place. And as I've said, you know, one of the first things we said when we were on here, don't release stuff like that out into the world because you don't know where it's going to end up.
No.
So I wouldn't be too concerned from a company perspective, provided we're not the ones who are going to be releasing it out in the world. What we don't want to do is take somebody's bad conduct and then put ourselves in a difficult situation with what we do with it. I'd be sticking it under lock and key, password protect it, and keep it for a legal rainy day in case it's called upon to be needed.
Okay. Third question, how should we handle this candidate's offer? Should we rescind the offer immediately or is there a process we should follow?
So we did rescind the offer in this situation. The person was deemed to have exhibited conduct that was inconsistent with our values on dignity.
It's a very formal way of saying they sent a naked picky.
Yeah, he messed up, basically. Funnily enough, he didn't argue the point.
Oh, okay.
So it was really, really strange. So, you know, he didn't kind of do, oh, you know, sorry, I thought I was sending it to a Tinder date. It didn't say HR was giving me the come on or she was asking for or any of that stuff that really gets us riled up, ready for a fight.
Yeah,
you know, he
yeah.
just kind of disappeared. So there was no kind of threats of litigation from him or anything like that. But it did raise a really, really key point that I did go over with this company because it was a new client. We hadn't done their contracts of employment. They were contracts that they already had. And interestingly, and this isn't uncommon, actually. It's something that I see a lot when we get a new business and they go, oh, we've got contracts. Can you look over them? It's a common loophole, which is that they will have in their contracts a termination clause that says, during your probationary period, we can dismiss you at a week's notice. Once you pass your probation, we will dismiss you at a month's notice. Once you've been here 2 years, it's 3 months. So we've got this kind of ladder effect yes. of, you know, how much notice we have to give to dismiss. Very rarely what I see is what happens before someone actually starts.
Okay.
So if you've signed the contract of employment, and the offer's been made, everybody's signed, and we're just waiting for day one, what happens in that period? And depending on how the contract has been worded, and that was the situation in this case, they would have had to pay the full-blown notice period, which was 3 months, to withdraw this offer.
Really?
Because of the way that notice clause was worded.
Oh, God.
So it's really, really important that we are explicit in a contract, in our offer letters, to say that if for whatever reason this contract gets withdrawn or you do not start or we're in a position where actually you can't start on day one, that we have an applicable notice period if it's not a case of we're making the offer and they start the next day. Because you could have someone who's working out a 6 month notice period. And where I see this, where we get conflict, is where someone has handed in their notice at a job. Their current employer's gone, please stay. And they've gone, nope, I'm going on to this great company. Thank you for everything, but I am going. Nothing that you will say will keep me. They start working out their notice period. New job offer gets pulled for whatever reason, and they're out of a job. So of course they're going to go, well, hang on, I can't go back to where where I've left because yes. I made it very clear that nothing would keep me there, and now I've got nothing to go to. So who's going to pay my mortgage? So one, it's really important when we're in a situation and we're withdrawing job offers that we have some empathy in that situation if it's not conduct related. With this guy, we weren't really showing any empathy at all. That we have empathy, that we're, particularly where it's not that person's fault, it could be that there's business changes, it could be that someone who was going to leave isn't leaving, whatever the reasons are, that we apologize for the situation that we're in because it's not that person's fault. If we are in a situation where our contracts are poorly worded and you are on the hook for that notice payment, it may well be something that you kind of financially just have to swallow. Because if you've made that mistake that you have then withdrawn the offer and potentially you end up in breach of contract by not paying that notice period, you're only making it worse for that individual. So if you're not sure what your contracts say, if you're not clear on what your notice provisions actually mean, it's crucial that you take advice on it. Because particularly with senior appointments where you've got people that are very well paid and very long notice periods, you could end up paying out 3, 6, potentially 9 months of salary for somebody who isn't going to be joining the business.
Yeah, man. I mean, a few things we spoke about today, like, especially on the policy side, the devil seems to be in the detail. Mm. Like, there's things that, like, I don't know if a lot of people miss this or in your experience from a professional standpoint, but it seems to, do you like, I don't want to say like lick your lips, but do you get like more excited when you see a longer policy document, like they've really gone to town on it?
I do. I like it when we've got detail. And I would say when I get my hands on something that's really bespoke to a business where they've applied a lot of thought and they're problem solving and they are, you know, really kind of setting out the rules of engagement for that business as they see it and as they experience it, I really like that because for me as an advisor, it kind of gives me a really good understanding of what that company, how it operates, what it's about, and what's important to them. If they've committed something to a policy, it might not even be rules. Policies don't just have to be a rule book. It could be kind of guidance around behavior or how the company operates or how we approach situations. That tells me a lot. So if I see a company that has a conflict reduction policy, and I do kind of, you know, it's something that I do take the mick out sometimes, mick out of on LinkedIn sometimes is, you know, oh, we've got a policy for everything. Some, you know, some do, you know, their handbooks are so thick that, you know, you could use it as a chock for your car when it's icy outside. But actually, if you've got someone in the intro to kind of their handbook is, this is our ethos. This is how we operate. We operate a culture of respect where we expect things to be raised informally. We look at conflict reduction, diffusing situations. That tells me a lot about the way that they operate rather than just, here's our code of conduct, here's our disciplinary policy.
You can tell a lot about a business by the way they set out the policies. Nice.
It tells me it's bespoke as well. That actually they've committed some finances to getting something right and that this is important to them.
Yeah, just a personal question, that one. We'll move on to the employee ones quickly now. I've got three to get through. Is it legal for the company to rescind my job offer based on the fact that I submitted an inappropriate photo and do I have any recourse?
Yes, it's legal. No, you don't.
Nice. That was good.
That's short and snappy. So yes, gross misconduct before you start is sufficient grounds to withdraw a job offer. In this situation, he probably wouldn't have legal recourse because what we'd be saying is you've breached our policies, our, you know, contract and the rules that we have around harassment and sexual harassment in the workplace. So unlikely to be any recourse.
Just a bit weird as well, isn't it?
It's a very odd thing to choose to do, isn't it?
To email nudes is crazy, you know, when you really think about that, like the servers it's stored on.
Yeah. Like, and it's also not, you know, I suppose when you're WhatsApping or you're forwarding things, am I giving him too much credit here? Is it easy to make a mistake doing that? But to open an email to attach something,
so much
type in the email address, you know, there's a few steps that you have to go through there.
Emailing nudes is...
Don't do it.
Second question, from the point of the poorly afflicted HR admin, I was a victim of this, I don't want to say crime, but of receiving the inappropriate image. What can be done to help me in future?
I mean, potentially it is a crime. It's sending a naked picture to someone, you know, sexual harassment. That, you know, is what
gross indecency.
Yeah, again, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but you know, she could potentially report him to the police for what he's done. So from her perspective, obviously the company is aware of it and they've taken immediate steps in by retracting this guy's job offer. I would say, you know, explore what support is available at the business if this is something that's affected you in a negative way, which undoubtedly it probably would. And from the employer's perspective, you know, it's and we've talked about this in other pods, that we get very kind of sucked into dealing with bad behavior that we forget about the people who have been on the receiving
affected
end of
by,
it.
Yeah.
So making sure that someone's checked in with her, that, you know, because this is going to be potentially like sat in her deleted items or something like that, you know, so let's make sure it's not on her system anymore. Check in with her, make sure she's okay. If we have got any support, peer support or any sort of professional support that we can offer, that we do that, and that we just, you know, keep an eye on her and see if there's anything that she needs.
And tighten up them policies, of course.
Yes.
In case you haven't done prior.
And also, you know, our screening, you know, were there any red flags that could have sort of given away some behaviour types?
Did
here?
He make any weird jokes, things like that in the interview? Do you know what I mean? You can pick up on how people are, can't you?
Potentially. I mean, I've talked
like
about...
You had a 10-minute interview with me just to make sure I wasn't odd. Not in them words, but
and
like...
And you're still working here. I mean,
exactly. I'm still odd, but like, you know what I mean? Like a sense check almost.
Yeah, I think definitely getting a second view on people and making sure that you're screening, you know, checking references, that sort of thing. And, you know, we are going to come onto this in the future in more detail. So we're going to talk about AI interviews, because it's stuff that I'm doing research on at the moment and something that's becoming more prevalent, and what those systems will pick up on and what we think is good and what we think is bad. But look, where are we finding our candidates? Where are we taking our pool from? How are we choosing them? Is there any way that we can dig out poor behaviours? Because when we're thinking about that preventative duty, that's really important. But also with the Employment's Rights Bill, now, you know, we've got the content of that. We know that in 2026, it's going to be much harder to dismiss people. We are going to potentially have this, what they're calling a statutory probationary period. But that isn't going to be a get out of jail free card. It isn't the ability just to dismiss somebody without process or procedure. So we need to be tightening up on how we're recruiting, making sure that we're getting the right people in. That's going to be stage one. Because if we have the right people, we're going to be less likely to need to dismiss them. And then if we are in the situation in 2026, then when we do have to dismiss, is that make sure that we are really clued up on our policies, that we're used to running these procedures, that we're good at being fair, objective, reasonable. That's the preparation that we need to be doing. Tightening up on recruitment, getting really good at operating policies. So we do see other providers that are kind of selling training or updates on the Employment Rights Bill, and they're talking about the content in the bill. That bill could change. What we do know is it's going to get harder to dismiss people in those first 2 years. What we need to be focusing on is, can our managers run a disciplinary process without making a mess of it? That's where we need to be focusing at the moment. As we get the detail in the bill, great, we'll do some training on that. But that's what we need to be focusing on at the moment.
Enable your workforce and put it into practice, eh? What emergency measures can HR departments take to stop this from happening in the future?
So we kind of touched on that there. But what I would say, crucially within our workforce, is this sexual harassment piece. So have we trained our staff? Do we have a standalone policy? Have we done a risk assessment? If we get an allegation of sexual harassment in and we've done all of that, but then we kind of go, now what? Well, do we have a suite of documents available that says, this is how we investigate, here's some template letters, this is how we make decisions around sexual harassment? So making sure that we have all the tools available that we need. And amazingly, we could provide that.
Go on, then.
So I'm calling this the sexual harassment product. I'm sure that our wonderful Dawn will come up with some better names. So I go out and I do sexual harassment training. We have an e-learning product where an employee can open the product on their laptop or their phone. They can take the training in their own time, and we can show at the end of it that someone has passed the course and who we have trained in that. So we should be training all of our workforce in what sexual harassment is, how to spot it, how to report it, that if someone reports it, we don't victimize somebody for reporting sexual harassment, all that really important stuff, that we've got a really good, strong policy. So we've got one of those, that we can do a risk assessment. We've got one of those for you with the guidance on how to complete it. Your suite of documents for running a disciplinary or an investigation in relation to sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. And then one of my favorite things that we've got for people is the manifesto. So the manifesto is the commitment that the business is making to its workforce. This is what we will not tolerate. We will root it out and we will deal with it properly. So it's on one page that says, this is our commitment to you. So not only does the company produce that when we onboard people, that we ask them to sign it, that we say, we want you to commit to this standard of behavior as well. So we've trained you, we've told you how to behave, and now you are committing that you will maintain that standard of behavior while you are with us. And that we have that is a public document, that we have our statements on sexual harassment visible in the workforce, so that when we have third parties coming on our premises, that it's really, really clear we don't tolerate anything here, so that we're really, really focusing on that proactive preventative approach. So we've got that all wrapped up in a product ready that can just be handed over. So your employees can go on the training, they can do the training, like we said, at the click of a button, and you have your suite of documentation ready to go.
Cover your blind spots as a business people. Yeah. Don't leave it too late. What happened with this? He didn't get the job.
He didn't get the job. So as they said in the email, so this was before as well, they were coming on board with the system, and we now have the wonderful Trust ID checking service. So when people are onboarding through our software, we can send out contracts of employment, we can send job offers, we do that whole onboarding process, we can book their probation review meetings, we can book their meetings with HR. So we get that all planned out before someone starts. But the Trust ID system means that we can check right to work before somebody starts. Because remember, that is our legal duty to do that. Before day one, we have to know that everybody has the right to work in the UK before they start with us. So the way that the system works is a link is sent to the candidate. They follow instructions. I think the process takes about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, we done it, didn't we? We done it first off time.
And that right to work check is then, we've got a great audit trail, and so that we, and it's stored appropriately as well within the system. So all of that is streamlined. I think it's in like less than 10, 15 clicks, something like that,
within the onboarding. It's not a lot.
Really, really simple to use as well. So yeah, in terms of emergency measures, one, that sexual harassment product, and this sounds like a massive plug. It is. This is a sales process.
Buy our stuff.
Yeah, but there's a preventative duty here. We've got to stop this happening. And it's not just because, you know, we've got this legal duty. We don't want people being subject to sexual harassment on our watch. We don't. As a matter of kind of ethics, we don't want it happening.
Dignity as well.
Yeah, within our own house. So yeah, from a not just a sales perspective, yes, you know, we've got this great product, but I feel really strongly about this. This is something, it's probably why I've sounded so ranty in this pod. I really feel really strongly that people should be able to go to work and be safe, which is why the product is so comprehensive. It's because I feel really, really strongly about it. So yeah, it's a great product. And also having that Trust ID, it's going to help with that screening process as
Absolutely.
Well.
You sound like a politician.
Well,
wow.
We seem to be short of high quality ones of those at the moment, so no, who knows?
No comment. Trust ID is now also ISO 27701. I say it like that because I don't know how to say it. Security approved. So, okay. So that's a big security GDPR accreditation in the industry, which is another, that was recently as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just another foolproofing point there. That was a long one.
That was a long one.
It was. Anything you want to add to finish on?
No, I think we've covered it. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening and contributing to our fantastic listener figures that we're very, very proud of. We've got some great examples and new topics coming up. So we've had some great stuff in this week as well. So provided it makes it through the Dawn test, we've got the cat story that I am determined that we're going to do. So make sure you check back in with us as our pods continue to drop. And over to you, Ollie, for the close.
More of the same. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.